Our Bibles out, and we'll get to those obviously momentarily. And then the handout, if you're using the handout, I will reference it in just a few moments. So obviously tonight we're going to continue looking at the names of God. This is part four, so if you're taking notes and such, this is part four. Follow basically the same thing we've done on the previous three parts. I'll do a quick review of this, meaning the handout. I won't go back over all of it, obviously, in detail, but I'll kind of review that just a little bit. And then tonight, we will find ourselves, if you have the handout, in the last, well, next to the last, Roman numeral 5, names of God, Jehovah. So that'll be what we look at this week. And then, Lord willing, we'll look to finish up next week with the rest of some miscellaneous type items that I'll cover. So we'll do that. Now I will be, if you had the handout that I had given out last time, the Got Questions, I'm not going to read through it. Obviously you all can read. So if you've read it, it's not anything new, but what I'm going to do is just do a little bit of an overview of the letter or the article rather. And then we'll start looking at those compound names. If you notice the first three on Roman numeral 5, we'll look at B, C, and D. So then obviously next week we'll look at Jehovah Jireh and a few other, I'll just say miscellaneous type things before we finish up. But in terms of review, I won't go back over everything again in detail, but if you have the handout and if you've been with us for any time, you probably remember all of this. But the names of God, obviously they have meaning and significance. That shouldn't surprise us because names oftentimes in the Old Testament had meaning and significance. I also mentioned that the names of God aren't nicknames. They sometimes are sort of presented that way, and that's not the best way of looking at them. We've also seen that in the introduction, I kind of touched on most of the names of God are names that God gives to help describe himself. Not always the case, but oftentimes it is. I kind of used the question in the first three parts, who is God to you? In other words, what I mean by that is if someone were to say, what is God like? How do you describe God? You know, where do you go with that? I mean, we need something more than a feeling. So as I mentioned on the sheet there, and we looked at one of the things you can do is describe his attributes or his names. And they both serve the basic same point, which is they help us to understand more of who he is. Now, if you take that idea, as we learn more about who he is, and the more you know about who God is, naturally you should want to honor and respect his name, which is what a lot of this boils down to, especially tonight when we look at Jehovah, where's the name come from? Last time I mentioned the same thing with Yahweh. The main point I would tell you, even if some of the grammar and the details sometimes escape you, the main thing I would hope you'd get across from last week, this week, and next week is this: God's name needs to be revered and honored. And that's really what the heart of a lot of what we'll look at has to deal with. We've covered the names that are on the list there, the El names. So El, Elohim, the El compound names. If you remember how the compound names work, same principle tonight. El, God, and then whatever is the, if you want to say extension, is what it's describing. So for example, we sang El Shaddai. El means God. Shaddai means powerful. So God is all powerful, almighty. So we've looked at El, all the El compound, well, most of the El compound names. I didn't obviously cover every single thing. We then looked at, in part two and part three, if you remember, Adonai and Yahweh, or Lord and Lord. Now, if somebody's listening to me, they're going to be confused. Remember, Adonai, if you remember the difference, is lowercase. So you have, obviously, uppercase L-O-R-D. So that's the lowercase version. When Adonai is used, it can be used in one of two ways. It could be between myself and another human, so a one-to-one, a human level. It also could be a human speaking to a deity. In other words, you think of Jesus, for example. However, Yahweh is different. Yahweh, of course, is capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. That's the difference between Lord, lowercase, and uppercase. The uppercase version is only for the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So that's kind of the way I described how to distinguish when you're reading between the two. Lord Adonai can be human to human or human to God, in other words. And then Yahweh would be different. It's all caps. It differentiates from anything else because it's speaking of the one true God. So you would not use Yahweh towards a God of Babylon, for instance, just as an example. Now, when we looked at Yahweh, and this will kind of weave into what we're going to look at in a minute with Jehovah, where does it come from, and that sort of thing. When we look at Yahweh, of course, I'd mentioned that the name technically can be abbreviated, if you remember, YHWH. We'll see that again tonight with Jehovah, which is where we get into the pronunciation of it. But Yahweh, if you remember, means independent, active, self-existent. Technically, it simply means to be, which is unique for God. Before we move in, though, to Jehovah and all of those pieces I spoke about, I read last week Thomas Constable had this statement regarding the name of God. He says, if you remember, taking God's name in vain, emptily, carelessly, or profanely means using the name of God in a common way. I mentioned that again last week, this week, and next week. The idea is to have reverence for God's name. And the whole idea of Yahweh, Lord, Jehovah, Yahweh is all to have reverence of God, okay? But we can take God's name in vain profanely, which I hope none of you I'd have to worry about that with. But you also, as Constable said, we can do it sort of flippantly, carelessly, and we shouldn't be, okay? So that's kind of a review. We've covered all of those items. Now, tonight we're going to move into Jehovah. Now, I could actually just leave off the introduction and sort of the overview of it, but the subject has come up before and it's a good time for us to do this. Now, when we look at Jehovah, this is the Roman numeral 5, and I have it as just general information. And it's going to be a little bit of information, and then I'm going to sort of summarize that article. Even if you didn't read it, it's perfectly fine. But when we look at Jehovah, of course, that's an obvious pronunciation. If you think about it, we have Bible translations, some that use Jehovah. There are hymns, like we've sung, that sometimes use it. However, sometimes people use Yahweh instead. And so one of the questions probably would come up, which sort of came up a while back, was why would someone use Jehovah? Where does it come from? And why do some people use Yahweh? And so I'm going to try my best to try to give you a general idea without going too far off the reservation. So the idea behind doing this is, why would someone use Yahweh instead of Jehovah and Jehovah instead of Yahweh? Well, in other words, where does Jehovah even come from? Okay, so let's look at that before we get into the compound names, and I think it might help a little bit. So when we look at Jehovah, obviously you know how to spell it. I have it on there, J-E-H-O-V-A, Jehovah. Pretty straightforward. We just sang it. Now, like Adonai, it sometimes can be used alongside or in place of Yahweh, YHWH. So if you read the article, most of this is going to be me somewhat summarizing it. Now, when you think of this, if try to keep it from getting lost here. Yahweh and those descriptions. So Yahweh means independent, active, self-existent. To be, we need to honor God. The Israelites, the Jews, I mentioned, have one thing that I think Christians could learn from, if you remember last week, which is a reverence for the use of God's name. They were so worried about blaspheming, in other words, Exodus 20, not taking God's name in vain, the way they pronounced it led to some of what we end up with Yahweh and Jehovah, okay? So all of the attributes, everything with Yahweh and Jehovah would be one and the same. It's an idea of where does the pronunciation come up with? If any of you read it, at the end of the day, what the issue is where do we come up with the pronunciation from? This isn't a doctrine. This isn't a theological issue. It's where does the pronunciation come from? So Jehovah is what is called a Latinized form of YHWH, okay? And so that's the first place we start. Where this comes from in terms of pronunciation and spelling, and you probably, if you read the article, know that it says this, combines the consonants YHWH, which you remember from last week, that's Yahweh. So it takes that, and then with the vowels of Adonai, of course, that's O and A. And so then what you end up with, of course, is something like this. I'm just going to spell it. Yah, in other words, Y-E-H, Ho-va, okay? And so you can see where if it was a Latinized and they used a J, it would begin to maybe sound like Jehovah. So that's the idea. Now, if you read the article, it's pretty similar to what I just said, but I'll touch on a few things. If you don't have the article, I've got a few extra copies there. I would encourage you to read it. It's more detailed. But just so we have an idea of basically this. Why do we pronounce it that way? Why do some people use Jehovah? Why do some people use Yahweh? And I'll give you actually an example in just a second. So just briefly, what the article says is, if you remember, it has that big name. Anybody remember? Tetragrammaton. That's a large word for today. But that is the name of the technical way of saying YHWH. It's the same thing. In other words, they mean the same thing. So in the Hebrew scriptures, you notice the article says that God's name is represented by four consonants, again, YHWH, and that's where that name Tetragrammaton comes from. It's the long word there. You remember? You don't really need to remember that. It means the same thing. So it's just a technical way of saying it. So I'll read this to you. It's ancient Hebrew was written without vowels. Pronunciation, notice. Pronunciation was preserved through oral tradition. And I think that's another thing to remember, too, when you think about the Old Testament and the New Testament. We tend to think of it today, right? You go to Kinko's, you go to Amazon, and they just produce stuff. Everything's in written form. Not so. It's oral culture, so pronunciation of things was important. So where is the origin of the name? Well, the article is going to tell you pretty much what I told you. Jehovah is a Latinized form of YHWH, and so when you take that and you add in the vowels from Adonai, that's the idea of where it comes from. Now, it's interesting, if you did read it, it says that Jehovah, meaning the form of that name, started in the Middle Ages. Any of you remember when that happened? No, probably not. I wouldn't think so. But I mentioned to you the time period where the name started to be used. And I do it for a particular reason, because some translations have it. The King James, if you have a King James Bible, the 1611, I believe, has it still. Because the King James, if you don't know this, has several reiterations of itself. If you were to look at, and I'll give you two verses, you don't need to, because if you don't have a King James, it's not going to do you any good. If you look at King James, or the American Standard Version has it, there's a few others that were written in that period of time or sometime after that. Genesis 22:14 and Exodus 6:3, they will use Jehovah. So when they translate from the Hebrew, they have it as Jehovah. So if you go and look, so all of our King James fans, don't shoot me. I'm just telling you that's how they translated. I wasn't there. They didn't ask my opinion. Okay, but I just want you to see it is a pronunciation issue, if you want to call it an issue. But if you were to go to the King James, the American Standard Version, actually the Darby translation, if any of you know who John Nelson Darby is, he translates, uses Jehovah. But if you think of the time period, it's probably why. Genesis 22:14, Exodus 6:3. So what I would tell you is, personally, I kind of go with this, which is that most scholars would say that they feel like Jehovah is not the best pronunciation of the original. The reason why they say that is this, quote, there was no J sound in ancient Hebrew. So obviously that would be hard to pronounce a J if you didn't use it. So most scholars think that the pronunciation of the name of God should be Yahweh. Now that, of course, is what I actually think it's a better way to pronounce it. It's hard to pronounce something in ancient Hebrew if there's no J, is it? So I'll give you an example. So if you look at some Bible studies on the names of God, Sometimes they'll say Jehovah, just like in the hymnal. Sometimes you have Jehovah, and just like some translations may use Jehovah. However, some people will not do that. So look on your handout real quick and notice the first Jehovah compound name, which we'll get to in just a minute. Don't worry. It says Jehovah. Anybody want to take a stab at that name? Is Tizkano. Has a D in it. Tizkano. All right. Now, if you look at that, it's what precedes it often is Jehovah. However, some scholars will do like this. You can see it. It'll say Jehovah instead of Jehovah. It says Yahweh with the extension on it. This is Stephen Waterhouse's book on Bible doctrine, and he goes with Yahweh. So here he says Yahweh. Another one, Yahweh Shalom. Some people will use Jehovah Shalom. Charles Ryrie, in his Basic Theology, does the same thing and goes with Yahweh. My main point to you is it's a pronunciation issue. It's been around for quite some time. Hence, that's why it's embedded so much in so much of our stuff. I don't have an issue with using Jehovah. If you ask me Stephen's preference, I think Yahweh is the better way to say it, but I don't have a problem with it. It's a pronunciation thing. I would just say it this way, and then we'll move on. I don't think you need to start a new church over it. Okay. And Christians a lot of times will do that. Go ahead, Sue.
No, I just had a question because Jesus starts with a J. How do they say it in Hebrew?
Well, if you think about it, it's Yeshua. That's where they get into how do you, yeah, it's Yeshua, technically. Yeah, so that would be, no, actually, that's a good point. So if you think about it, a lot of times the J, actually to use Sue's point, it's not that way. So it's a pronunciation thing. I'm not trying to be funny. We don't need to start churches over it, although some do. I guess I won't get into that. I prefer using Yahweh because I think that it is the more accurate way. Obviously, we sang a song on it, and I don't have an issue with it, okay? If you have any questions about it, if you haven't read that Got Questions article, I would encourage you to do so. If you still are interested in it, let me know, and I have some theological books you can read. They'll pretty much tell you the same thing in about 1,000 pages, though. But you can do it. So if you ever run across Jehovah and someone says that's the proper name, I wouldn't argue with them about it. You can. I would just want you to understand where the name comes from, okay? I think Yahweh is the better preference. Now, so if you look at these compound names, I almost went with my preference, but I didn't because I know most of these. If you look at the last one on the handout, Jehovah Jireh, my provider, right? The song? Most people don't. That's how we know the name, okay? So I prefer Yahweh, but in any case, let's move on. All right, so let's look at the first of the compound names, Jehovah, or if it was Stephen, I would say Yahweh, Tizkano. All right, so that's how it would say. It has a D sound in it, Tizkano. All right, let's look at Jeremiah 23:6. So we're going to move on. Probably told you more than you ever dreamed of, but it was a good question a while back we had, and now's a good time to have at least somewhat dealt with it. All right, let's look at the first of these compound names. So remember, the compound names work the same as El. Lord, and so the question is, what does Tizkano mean? It means righteousness. So what it would be saying is just what we're getting ready to read. Jehovah, Yahweh is our righteousness or is righteousness. So let's look at, someone read Jeremiah 23 and verse 6 for me. Anybody want to read it? All right.
In his days, Judah will be saved, and Israel will dwell securely. And this is his name by which he will be called, the Lord our righteousness.
All right. So there you can see where it is used. You notice the Lord there? Not to beat the dead horse. Yes, exactly. So some would see that as, of course, we know what that is, Yahweh, Y-H-W-H, You could say Jehovah or Yahweh. So it would be saying, your Yahweh, Jehovah, is our righteousness. Another use of that is, we won't have to turn here, it's Jeremiah 33:16. It's used the same way. Now, I do want to mention something, which is a question comes up sometimes, and you guys have asked me before. Okay, so when we go to the New Testament, what's the Greek word? The Greek for righteousness in the New Testament, I'll just spell it. It's D-I-K-A-I-O-S. So again, if you want to know what the Greek is, and I'm going to read in just a minute, of righteousness, it's D-I-K-A-I-O-S. Now, I want someone to read for me 2 Corinthians 5:21, because Jesus becomes our, when we have placed our trust in him. So just as God is seen as being the nation of Israel, God's people's righteousness in the Old Testament, the same idea is used in the New Testament. Probably know this as soon as someone reads it, or else, actually, I'll just read it. 2 Corinthians 5:21, he made him who knew no sin to be sin on our behalf, so that we might become the righteousness of God in him. So when you and I place our trust in Jesus, Jesus becomes our righteousness. We're clothed in what? Thankfully not Stephen's righteousness, which is filthy and sinful, clothed in the righteousness of Jesus, the idea of Paul's theology of imputed righteousness. So when we look at that first compound name, they work the same as the L names. Remember, L meaning God plus the extension. That's all it's doing when you use these compound names. So Yahweh, Jehovah, Tiskano would mean Yahweh is our righteousness. And Jesus is our righteousness, isn't he? So either Old or New Testament. All right, so I mentioned earlier this one as well, so let's move to the next one on the list of those compound names, Jehovah or Yahweh, Shalom. We all know what Shalom means, don't we? Okay, so if you put those together, the Lord is peace. Pretty easy, right? Yep. All right, so let's look at two verses. Let's look at Judges 6:24. So Judges 6:24, and if someone will read that, I will take the New Testament one. So someone read Judges 6:24 for us. You wouldn't be thinking peace in Judges. Judges is a rough book.
Got it.
Okay, go ahead.
6:24?
Yes, Judges 6:24.
Then Gideon built an altar there to the Lord and named it, "The Lord is Peace." To this day, it is still an Ophrah, or of the Abrasites.
All right. So there, that would be, if you were to look at it in Hebrew, that's what it would be saying. It would be saying that Yahweh, Jehovah, is Shalom. He is peace. So it's Judges 6:24. We won't read this next one. Isaiah 9:6, we use that at Christmas, don't we? All right. The Lord is peace there. Idea of peace. So that's Judges 6:24, Isaiah 9:6. I'm going to read this one. This is in the benediction of the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 20 says, Now the God of peace. Okay, if you ever read this benediction there, great one. Now the God of peace, who brought up from the dead the great shepherd of the sheep through the blood of the eternal covenant, even Jesus our Lord. So the idea, same thing. God is the believer's peace. Now, I want to digress just for a second on this. There's a difference in the New Testament with the idea of peace with God and the peace of God. You remember? All right. So the way I would tell you is peace with God is when we have peace that comes through justification. Okay, it's a more fancy term, but we can grow up and pretend we're not in Sunday school anymore and, you know, children's church. So peace with God is the idea that you and I have peace with God through justification. And you say, well, Stephen, how in the world do you come up with that? Are you just making it up? Nope. It sounded good, but I'm not making it up. So if you were to turn to Romans chapter 5, And I just want to make sure with this, I'm not suggesting you don't know this, but we would be looking in the New Testament with peace with God, because that's what comes first. And then, as Wanda said, the peace of God is subsequent to it. So the peace with God comes through justification. If you look at just verse 1, for instance, a great verse. So Paul has said basically all of humanity is condemned. You bet he had a lot of friends with that message, didn't he? You're all sinners. But by grace through faith, we have what? Notice Romans 5:1. Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. So what does the verse say? Well, to have peace with God, it comes through having trusted in the Lord Jesus Christ. When we do that by faith, we are justified before God. We are what? Not made righteous. Sorry, you're still not righteous. You're declared righteous. God looks at you, and thankfully he doesn't see Stephen. He sees Christ's righteousness. Verse 10 says the same thing. So peace with God comes through justification. Now the peace of God is the result of justification. That's the way I say it. Now, where would we find this? This would be in Philippians 4:7. You ever known people that want peace and they start here and they think, well, if I get this, then maybe I'll get right with God. But you notice the order of things. The order of things is peace with God comes through justification. And then the peace of God is the result of justification. So Philippians 4:7 says, after telling us to be anxious for nothing, everybody loves that, right? None of you are anxious for any reason, are you? All of us pray at all times with thanksgiving, don't we? Probably not. But notice in all seriousness what it says. After we do this, what is it? We have the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension. It guards both the hearts and the minds. So we have the peace of God. So when I think of it, I think of peace with God is where it starts, with being justified with God. Then after you're justified, you can have the peace of God because you have been justified with God. It's something that comes from him. The Believer's Bible Commentary states it this way. People of the world are surprised at Christians' own lack of anxiety in the face of tragedy and adverse circumstances. I could say as a pastor, that's typically true with funerals, because typically Christians respond differently to funerals than the lost world because they have no hope. It goes on, it says, this peace garnishes the heart and the thought life. What a needed antidote for this type of peace in our world today. And I'll only mention that to you so that if you come across somebody that's looking for peace, they won't find the peace of God until they've made peace with God. So by way of reminder. So we've looked at the first two of those compound names. So I kind of did an overview of Jehovah. Where does it come from? We've looked at the Lord is our righteousness. The Lord is peace. In terms of the New Testament, we have peace with God, the peace of God. Look at the last one for tonight. Jehovah Ra'ah. Anybody want to say that one real fast? So it's Jehovah or Yahweh, whatever floats your boat. R-A-A-H. So if we know the first part of it, all we have to know is what does R-A-A-H mean? It means shepherd. So if you put it together, it would be just like all the other ones, the Lord is my shepherd. Now for our Greek students that are out there, at least I know there's one of them over here to my left. The Greek for shepherd is P-O-I-M-E-N. P-O-I-M-E-N, and we have a couple of verses. Now, anybody know the beginning of Psalm 23:1? Lord is my shepherd. Okay, that's where it comes from, and that would be what it says. However, there's other ones that teach the same thing. I'll just do this for time's sake. Psalm 80 and verse 1. So this one, Psalm 80 and verse 1 says, O give ear, shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock, and so forth. So you can still see the same idea is there as well. So not only did David teach that, but that's a psalm of Asaph. there. Now, I want to ask you a question. Does anybody know, because you guys like trivia and I don't usually give trivia. So we've looked in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, Jesus says he is the shepherd. I kind of mentioned that with the I am statements. Anybody know the chapter or verse?
I am the good shepherd.
Yep. Yep, that's right. It's 10. Was that Dave said that? So it is John 10, 14 through 18. So when we look at this, it would be, of course, what Sue said. So John 10, that's 14 through 18. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, even as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. I lay down my life for the sheep, and so forth. So that's encompassed in verses 14 through 18. When you think of a shepherd, what do you think of? Well, protection, provision, and care. Those would be the easy ones to remember, right? And so David said that Yahweh, the Lord, was what? Well, he's his protector, he's provider, and he cares. Now manifested in the flesh, Jesus takes that to a whole nother plane, doesn't he? Jesus is the provider, he is the protector, and he cares for his own, doesn't he? And so all of those truths are realized in Jesus. I like this quote by Warren Wiersbe. He says, God will always provide whatever we need so that we don't have to turn to anyone else except him. It's a good way to put it, isn't it? But notice he says need, not greed. All right, now I'm going to end with something, and it's not anything that you probably haven't heard or sung before, but I ran across this as sort of a variant, and I thought it fit well with this, and then I'll see if you have any questions. You, of course, heard the song, the hymn, Like a River Glorious, right? It talks about God's peace. At the ending, it says, stayed upon whom? Actually, there's this individual, he did a variation of it. It's not blasphemous, okay, because it's not authorized, it's not, you know, it's not inspired, okay, all those hymn lovers. It's not inspired, but this is the way he takes the hymn. You probably will recognize what I'm saying in a minute. He says, like a river glorious is God's perfect peace, over all victorious in its bright increase. We know that. Perfect, yet it floweth fuller every day. Perfect, yet it groweth deeper all the way. So we're good there, right? Ordinarily, it says stayed upon Jehovah, but he changes it and says stayed upon Jesus Christ. Hearts are fully blessed, finding, as he promised, perfect peace and rest. That's sort of the idea. Jesus, of course, is the ultimate revelation of peace and such. All right, so next time we will look at the last one listed on there. I have a few freebies that I will include along with some closing thoughts.